This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
We know her so well from this really famous Irish band that were pretty much popular here in Australia at the same time they were anywhere else in the world, if not a little bit earlier. We'll find out a little bit more about that later. The problem is that the band that she was in was so popular that I heard that they had this huge fight and they don't speak to each other anymore. Sharon Corr, is that the truth?
Well, it would be very likely, seeing as we're a family. But no huge bus stop, but we probably did need a bit of time apart. You know, if you're in a band and you're also a family, it's quite intensive, you know?
Yeah, like, because she had huge success.
Yeah.
And it went on for years, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we were kind of the guts of 20 years on the road, so it was, you know, it was a long time, but it was an amazing, amazing experience. And one of the first places for us to have success was here in Australia, which was brilliant. And it was our first experience of actually being famous and being successful. So, we had a really great time here, and we came here every year.
Yeah. What was it like when you actually broke? Because I remember the commitments. There was a connection there. You rehearsed for that, didn't you? You went to... didn't you try to be part of the commitments, the movie?
Well, all of Ireland tried to be part of the commitments. It was like the only thing happening in Ireland at the time. In the 90s in Dublin were kind of a depressed era, if you know what I mean. There wasn't much going on in the economy. So, and it was a massive opportunity, and there was huge incentives to bring in big films into the country's great tax incentives. So literally everybody auditioned for it. But I suppose what came out of it was the impetus to put us together as a band. So we auditioned as a band. And then Andrea got a little key role in the movie, and the rest of us got sort of extra blink and you'll miss us type roles. But the great thing to come out of it was we actually ended up with a publishing deal, which allowed us to write and record. And that obviously got us to the stage where we could bring our demos out to the States and get people to listen to them. And then we ended up with a record deal.
What was it like growing up in your family? Obviously everyone learnt musical instruments.
Yeah, I mean, mum and dad were both musicians and actually had a band together at the weekends apart from their regular jobs. Our house was just all about music. I mean, we didn't know that as being a regular. That was totally normal to us. So I started playing violin from six, probably piano from a little earlier. Jim was always, we all played piano. Andrea took up tin whistle. Caroline took up drums. So, I mean, it was just a big musical house.
So it was just an obvious thing to happen that you would form a band.
Well, I suppose, there are many things that make something like that happen. And I think naivety is one of the biggest ones, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, to actually decide, oh, let's get in a band with my family and tour the world is an unusual thing to do. But we did have a great gelling musically, and that really went out there. People got it, so it really worked musically for us.
Well, you could also tell that on stage too. There was a really nice chemistry between you, weren't there? Yeah. But were there fights?
Oh, for God's sake, of course. Are you kidding? Plates flying, the whole thing. You cannot be in each other's pockets, and literally, because we would end up sitting on couches and we're all squeezed onto them doing interviews like 18 hours a day at some stages, and you want to kill each other after that because you're bored listening to people get, you know, each other giving the same answer.
But
that's healthy. I think a family that don't row, there's something really wrong.
Of
course we did, but in fairness I happen to think one of our greatest achievements was that we respected each other and got on. You know, that's a great achievement after that length of time together.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, so you had a break, and all of you did, and you had a couple of children.
Mm-hmm.
How amazing is that?
Yeah, it's
how old
the
are
best
they?
Thing. They're 4 and 5.
Okay, you've left them behind.
They're here in Melbourne with me.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Is that hard, being on the road with two youngsters?
Well, it's hard on my husband. I think he did the two huge flights the other day. So, but it's really worth it. I think it's a very positive environment for kids. It makes them see the opportunities, the potential of what you can do in the world and where you can go to, and it opens up their horizons. And I think that's very important.
Yeah,
you know, because to not blinker them off, you know.
Now, a new album.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to do it at this stage?
Well, it was just a very natural thing for me to do. When we come off the road, I made a very conscious decision to keep riding, because you get rusty. And I thought, okay, well, I mean, obviously I'm taking time out to have my children, but I don't want music ever to be out of my life, because it is, you know, I have two halves to me. It's music and my kids, and both have to be there. So, I was writing, and I was writing so much, and I thought, oh God, I'm actually doing a solo album. That's what's happening here. So it just made perfect sense. And I wanted to feel what it was like to express myself completely and go down my own road sort of in totality and become a sort of center stage performer as well and do all that sort of thing. It's just part of my journey, I feel, a very natural one.
The wonderful thing about this album is you've used a couple of, tracks that are instrumental. For obvious reasons, because you are a musician, and quite traditional songs, a few of them as well.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, because when I decided to do the album, I decided not to deny any of my past. I wanted to bring my past with me, show my present, and hint at the future. For me, it always really bugs me when an artist leaves the band, or, you know, whatever they do, and then all of a sudden you hear them in this totally different genre and you can't identify with them at all, and it doesn't feel natural. So for me, my violin was staying because I'm playing it since I was 6 years old, and it kind of weaves itself through my music, but I wanted to experiment differently with it on this album. So you'll hear some trad, but you'll also hear some almost kind of jazzy feel to it, especially on the Corgis number. And it's very dark on Small Town Boy, and then there's a very classical element to it. So,
you mentioned Small Town Boy. Yeah. Let's talk about that, because that song has a huge history here on our station.
Sure, yeah.
Because the person who sang it. Yeah. Why did you choose that song?
I'll tell you how it came about. I mean, it was one of the biggest anthems from my teenage years. I absolutely loved it. And Bronx Ski Beat were an absolutely amazing band. I loved Jimmy Somerville. I loved his vocals. But it was very much the sort of technology era, and it was very electronic. But literally, maybe 2 or 3 years back, I was lying in bed one night in France, and there was a great big booming disco going on downstairs. Couldn't get any sleep, and I had really young kids at the time. And I was cursing this old disco all night, and about 5 in the morning, on came da 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 da. And I thought, that's why I'm up all night, because I love that song and I'm going to cover it. And I knew immediately what I wanted to do. It. I wanted to turn it on its head. I feel it's an anthem for gay people all over the world, because I feel it is what it kind of transcends all barriers, that song, and any perceived barriers that people have. It goes to the true heartache of being actually outcast socially for your natural sexual preference. And it's a hideous thing. And it just broke my heart listening to those lyrics, and gave me a really true insight, which is hard, difficult to have when you're heterosexual naturally. So because it's kind of like, you know, how do you identify with childbirth before you go through it? Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
If you haven't been outcast yourself, you can have a lot of empathy, but his lyrics they suck you right in, alone on the platform, you know, in the rain, sad and lonely. And it's just, it's immense. It's a beautiful song. So, and I wanted the music to follow the lyrics. So that's what I did with it. And it's quite orchestral and it's quite dark. And I love singing it. Jimmy Somerville actually contacted me to say that he loved it.
Oh, excellent. Because the one thing I love about it, and the sheer fact you have slowed it down and you really listen to the lyrics a lot more, is how powerful the end is. The emotion that you brought out. I'm getting goosebumps even thinking about it now.
Yeah.
It really worked well. You must be very proud of that.
I am, actually. I think it's one of the best tracks on the album. I mean, there's something very liberating about covering somebody else's music, because you don't follow your own constraints. It's a very strange thing. It just opens you up to that music. And in some ways, vocally, I identify more with what Jimmy Somerville wrote than sometimes I identify with maybe a chorus song. You know what I mean? It's kind of, it's just so soulful, and he's a very soulful singer. You know?
Oh, absolutely. Now, I'm going back to the beginning of the album, Our Wedding Day.
Yeah.
Did that relate to your life at all? Or It's the instrumental opening track.
It's a tune that's been around my whole life, and it kind of vocally, it's been also She Moves Through the Fair, and it's been covered by a lot of different bands over the years. But I wanted to, at the opening of the album, I wanted to let people know that the violin's still here, that this is not an artist who has changed completely overnight and it's now going to be, death metal album or something like that. I just wanted to identify the violin up front, and I love this piece of music, and I kind of played it quite differently. I violin wise, I did a lot of slides, which would be probably more North African than they would be traditional. So I kind of like mixing the musical genres together on that one. So yeah.
And then the track that follows it, It's Not a Dream.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. Is that about your life, or you know, it is?
Yeah, I think, you know, when I wrote It's Not a Dream, I was literally thinking about the fact that, you know, life can be incredibly difficult, and if you're lucky enough to have somebody that loves you and that you can hold hands with and battle the world with, then you're truly very, very lucky, and it's something that you need to appreciate. And this, I wrote this song because, you know, people are kind of very often in relationships kind of looking at what's next and not thinking, wow, isn't this great that I can just talk about all the crap that I like talking about and all the silly stuff and moaning and or just have dinner and chat and talk about your life and work through problems. Isn't that just so lucky? So it's not a dream. It's reality, you know. And I just wanted to write that song to constantly remind myself that I am very lucky to have that.
Mm. You've done a track with Jeff Beck. Now, there's a name a very famous name, instrumental track.
Yeah. 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 I mean, that was a real coup, I have to say. I went to a show of his in Dublin and right in the middle of recording my album, and I managed to get backstage and said hi to him, and we got on really well. He's a lovely guy, really humble guy, and what a musician. I mean, he's just mind blowing. Because I was in the middle of recording the album, and the cogs were turning in my brain going, God, I wonder would he ever record with me? And I thought, okay, well, what would attract him? And I thought that sort of blend of classical and traditional might attract him. So we kind of sat in the studio for days and thought about what tracks might work. And Manona Heron seemed to be the one that, which means Women of Ireland. It's a Celtic track. And it seemed to be the one that would work. So we worked on the arrangement and we sent it out to him. And he fell in love with it and played some mind-blowing guitar on it, and he now plays it on every show that he does around the world, you know, so it's great. It's brilliant.
Oh, what a lovely compliment.
When I get on stage with him, I got on stage with him in the O2 in London last year, and he goes, what are you doing playing on my track? And I went, no, back off, this is my track. You know, so yeah, he loves it.
Excellent. Now, the first single lifted from it is
Everybody's Got to Learn Sometime. Yeah.
A beautiful song. Yeah. It's one that I've loved for many years. Why that track?
Well, I mean, that was very organic. I was rehearsing for my first big solo gig, which was the Isle of Wight Festival in the UK. And my guitarist said to me, why don't you sing that one? Because I'd been playing the violin solo on it with the Italian artist Sucro a number of times in different places around the world. And he said, why don't you try singing it? And I did, and it suited my voice. And then everybody just kind of went, oh, you have to do that one. And then it just kind of came on the album. And that's very common on albums, that something that comes in very last minute and you don't even, I mean, I didn't even identify that I would do covers on this album. Only Small Town Boy was just so powerful. I just wanted to. And then this one, you know, I kind of had no intention of it, but everybody loved it. And then it's the first single. So kind of you have to go with the flow of these things.
Yes. Now, touring, you're obviously back on the road, and I didn't realize you were doing so much overseas, and you're here now.
Yeah.
How important is touring in support of this album?
Oh, I think it's huge. You know, people can listen to an album, but when you hear an album live, you get a true sense of the music and the musician and the band. And I mean, there's nothing like a great concert, you know. So the other thing is, it's actually very selfish because I love it. I just love touring. So I mean, I just love being out there performing, and it was something I missed while I was having my baby. So it's very important for me to do that.
Mm. And they're at that age now where you can take them on the road because school's not really in the way yet.
Yeah, it's not in the way, and they're just on midterm now at the moment. So it kind of fell nicely.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've got to ask you, the voice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great.
So you're doing the Irish version of it?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's a great show. I was delighted to be asked to do it. It's a very interesting format and very different from a lot of the other formats, and the fact that I feel it's quite pure because you don't see the person who's auditioning. It's a blind audition. So you can actually only pick them because they have a great voice. So it kind of cuts through all this sort of she looks great, she can't sing so well, or he looks great, he can't sing so well. I mean, it just kind of, it is just about the voice. And from there on in, we're doing a lot of coaching with the artists, so we get very heavily involved. And it's a great way to sort of, for me to give back and in some ways learn what I've learned, if you know what I mean, understand what I've learned over the years. And it's really interesting just to see all these new great artists. I mean, there's so much musical talent in Ireland. It's quite staggering. And we also perform live. The coaches on the show perform live. So right. I feel it creates a very equal playing field between the artist and the coach. So, yeah.
Why is there so many amazing singers and songwriters and musicians from Ireland for such a small country?
I know, it's kind of an interesting question. It was how we sort of entertained each other forever. I mean, Ireland was probably in the dark ages for a lot longer than a lot of other places. So the campfire and the singing and the shannos and the storytelling was a giant part of our life, and it's still a huge part of our social life. I mean, it's in the pubs all the time. So we're literally just brought up, we're just conditioned in music, and I think that's why. And I think also Ireland has gone through a lot of quite troubled history, and it's a great way of getting your troubles out by expressing it through music and through art. And then there's great artists, great literature from Ireland, and great music, and I think it's all inspired by that.
Sharon Cole, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.